This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
The Solomon Islands, far away in the Pacific, and yet close at hand with a dispute that now looks very much to be part of the confrontation with the People's Republic of China and its ambition to impress upon its immediate region, East Asia, and the Pacific Rim, its authority in the 21st century. How? We go to the Solomon Islands, in particular, the lead island, Guadalcanal, which is part of the legend of the United States' ability to recover from the attack on Pearl Harbor many decades ago. But taking me there now is someone who's guided me to the Solomons these many months, Cleo Pascal, a senior fellow of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, because in the Solomon Islands is in one place, in one leadership, all of the anxiety of major allies and adversaries of the United States of America. Australia, to begin with, Taiwan, Tokyo, Japan. And also I mentioned that other parts of the alliance are going to be involved in how the Solomon Islands dispute is resolved. That would be the United Kingdom entering into an alliance with Australia and the United States called AUKUS. Cleo, a very good evening to you. I read from the headlines most recently, Agence France, China's Solomon security deal upends Australian election. There is an election underway between Scott Morrison and his challengers in Australia, the first in Australia after the pandemic is lifted. Beijing's security deal, reads the report, with Solomon Islands has transformed Australia's closely fought election campaign into a foreign policy battle over Canberra's complicated relationship with the Pacific, the whole of the Pacific. Australia's Liberal government lobbied hard against the Solomons signing a pact with China alongside ally the United States, but neither was successful in dissuading the capital of the Solomon Islands, the lead city in Guadalcanal, Honiara. I stop here because this requires your skills, Cleo, to pull all these forces together, how so many great, powerful players, the capital in Beijing, the capital in Washington, the capital in Australia, are now agreed that there is trouble in Honiara, there's trouble in the Solomons. How did we get here, Cleo? Good evening to you.
Good evening. So there are three separate tracks that came together. One is domestic Solomon Islands politics, one is Australia's interaction with the Pacific, and one is China's ambitions in the Pacific, and in fact, in the Indo-Pacific. And in terms of domestic Solomon Islands politics, the way that you framed it is very accurate. This is centered really around one man, the current prime minister, Sogavare. This is the fourth time he's prime minister. He's not a stabilizing force. When he came in for the first time, it was as the result of a coup. The next two times he was prime minister, he was kicked out through a vote of no confidence. When he got reelected this time, there were riots. Within a very short few months, he had switched the country from Taiwan to China. He is not widely popular, but he's a very good bureaucrat, political manipulator, deeply corrupt, knows how to spread money around. So when the Australians were there on and off through their deployment through Ramsay for about 16 years, what they should have done was what was agreed in 2000 at the end of the Civil War, which was to devolve power so it wasn't centralized in this office of the prime minister, so that the provinces had a bigger say. And the provinces are, by and large, deeply against the Chinese shift. And if Australia had not facilitated the centralization of power for their own convenience, because they were running a peacekeeping force for about 16 years, and it served them well to have a compliant, centralized government in Honiara, then we would have had a situation that was much more difficult for China to influence. Now, basically, all China had to do is grab the reins that Australia had put in place of this centralized vassal-type state. But what they got, the horse that China's riding, is a much more compliant horse. It's a very kind of 1970s Mugabe-style anti-Western imperialist language type guy. And no matter what he says to the Australians, he's always been against the Australians, and he always will be, but he will play them. So these three factors came together, this kind of quite corrupt anti-Western, anti-freedoms, autocratic Sogavare, mismanagement by the Australians, and good management of their own expansion by the Chinese.
So I understand, in part, that this isn't about something that we can find in other countries, say Lithuania. You choose Taipei and we're against you, says Beijing. You choose Beijing and we'll pour money in. That's what it looks like in other countries. This turns on the man, now Prime Minister, Manasa Sogavare, and his presentation to Canberra, his opposition to Canberra. So we need to explore him, because right now there's a draft of an agreement, and an agreement between Beijing and Honiara, between Xi Jinping's Communist Party and one man, Sogavare. This is a man who has been prime minister 2000 to 2001. Then he was out of office and not prime minister again, second term to 2006, 2007. Then he was out of office, said to be leader of the opposition, prime minister again, 2014 to 2017. He's relentless. And now his fourth term as prime minister, 2019 to present. We know what he's against. What is he for? He has brothers. He's said to be a Seventh-day Adventist. Does he represent a power center, industrial development? What are his themes that we know about? Because he's made this story about his authority.
Well, that's what he's about. He's about personal authority, which is augmented by corrupt practices that are incredibly destructive to the country as a whole. He's deep in with illegal logging, a lot of it based out of China. That illegal logging is not only destructive environmentally, but it destroys communities and families and societies. It kicks people off land. Illegal logging brings in violence, rape, gambling, prostitution, really, really socially destructive. But it also brings in a lot of money, and he can use that money to spread around to reinforce his authority, his position, and his power within the country. But a lot of that money also goes outside of the country. He has people within his entourage, at the very least, who are using the corrupt money to buy properties in Australia, for example. So there are ways to get at him and to undermine that structure, ways that we as democracies who care about accountability, transparency, rule of law, and democracy should be utilizing for the same people in the Solomon Islands, the vast majority of people in the Solomon Islands who care about those exact same things. So if the Australians, instead of trying to cut a deal with Sogavare and going to, beg him to give up on China, which he'll never do anyway, if they started doing investigations into disproportionate assets of him and his cronies in Australia and in New Zealand and elsewhere, that would be not only the morally right thing to do, it would be the strategically right thing to do.
A puzzle, Cleo. I learned from reading about the Solomons, I certainly have never been there, and I take your guidance on this. This is a constitutional monarchy. It has a parliamentary system, I think I'm saying correctly. And Queen Elizabeth II, the Elizabeth who leads the United Kingdom, is the head of, or is said to be the head of state, of the Solomon Islands. Is that an influence in any fashion? I don't even know if it's a member of the Commonwealth. It certainly has a history, a long history in the region, as Australia does, in relationship to European powers. Does that play in at all to these disagreements?
Well, it does in the context. So just for American listeners, it's not dissimilar to the Canadian system. Canada also has Queen Elizabeth as the head of state, and it has provinces and a parliamentary monarchy system. And like Canada, the way that Canada dealt with these disparate factors is there's a lot of devolution of power to the provinces. So what Sogavare is basically trying to do is create a presidential style system where the power is very centralized in the central executive. So if it was more of what it was designed to be, which is a kind of, Canadian style system where the provinces do have a lot of independence, then that is actually exactly what I mentioned at the beginning, what they're asking for in that Townsville Peace Agreement from 2000. So it's not an unusual system for the Commonwealth.
I come to a report from last week, Prime Minister Sagavare speaking in the parliament. Prime Minister Sagavare in parliament said that the Australian government was being hypocritical over the Solomon Islands security deal with China, saying the AUKUS deal was not transparent, but he did not become theatrical and hysterical. He says the Solomon Islands and other countries in the region, quote, should have been consulted to ensure that this AUKUS treaty is transparent, since it will affect the Pacific family by allowing nuclear submarines in Pacific waters. That's extremely astute of him to play this a card now at this remove. Is that something we've seen before? This is not a local leader expressing power. This is a man who reads the headlines out of Europe.
There are a lot of very smart, deft leaders across the Pacific Islands. They've been through colonialism for the past 150 years. They know how to play powers off of each other. They know our soft points. They know what triggers our media. But they also know how to be completely disingenuous. And this is the case. AUKUS is defensive. AUKUS is about keeping an expansionist power out of the region. There's no request for AUKUS bases in the Solomon Islands. What this deal is offensive on the part of China. It's about projecting China's power in an offensive way, potentially having at least dual use, if not bases in the Solomons, so that it can extend its zone of influence kinetically, militarily, in order to attack and take over other countries. So AUKUS is defensive, but what they're doing is offensive. It's a very different dynamic.
What can be done and why when we come back with Cleo Pascal of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, examining the Solomon Islands group just north. If you look at Australia, the large continent, go north and you'll run into the Solomon Islands, which is why it's so critical in this region to establish authority in the Solomon Islands to protect the sea lanes, also to protect the communication between the United States and its ally, Australia. I'm John Batchelor.